It says St. Petersburg, but he's not there anymore.
Wayne Butler, alcoholic. I want to thank Ike and his committee for inviting me to come spend this weekend with you good people. I want to thank Kavika and Gain for host and hostessing me. They've just been a bucket of love. I really love AA. If there's anybody new in the room, I want to let you know that the most important thing that I have to share with you about myself is that I love AA. And what that means is when I called me, I said yes, when I didn't want to. I don't mean no disrespect. I'm really having a lot of fun since I got here. But I didn't want to leave home. My book tells me that I have a new employer and that if I perform his work well, he will take care of me. And one time I was wanting to stop traveling and carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sponsor asked me, did you call those people and ask them to call you, or did they just call you out of the blue? I knew he had me, so I tried to worm my way out of it. And I said, well, I suppose they just called me out of the blue. He said, dummy, that's God calling. Now, do you want to say yes or do you want to say no? So here we are. I really like doing this once I start doing it. I'm really content just kind of sitting by myself. If you knew me personally, you'd know I don't like people. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, what you had on your hands was a drunken racist. You had a drunken bigot, homophobic, and I didn't like women. My psych report reads, Wayne does not play well with pets. You'd have drank too, by God. I want you to know something. My sponsor told me to ask God for help and then don't try to help him with that help. So in a moment of weakness, I asked God to help me with my prejudices and my racism and my bigotry. My first sponsee was gay. My second sponsee happened to be of color. My third sponsee, although it's not popular, was a woman. So watch what you ask God help with. I'm here to report to you my sobriety date of November 8, 1977. I haven't had any pills, powders, potions, or lotions. Since that day, I have a sponsor, I have a home group, and I have sponsees. In my opinion, that puts me in good stead with the God of my understanding who manifests himself through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if you're new, I want you to know it's very important to work the steps, and I'm going to tell you why. In my opinion, if I don't work the steps, the fellowship will drive me to drink for sure. I was getting thirsty this weekend already. We had a guy in my home group named Big Book Bob. I hated Big Book Bob. I drank when I saw Bob. Bob would hit me in the head with a big book. If he said, you ain't going to read it, you might as well wear it. I hated Big Book Bob. Bob would say things like this, yeah. And I'd be in the front row having drank the night before. And the topic would be gratitude. He'd say, I'm Big Book Bob and I'm an alcoholic. I realize the topic's gratitude, but I got to mention something to you. I haven't found it necessary to drink since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous 9,000 years ago. And I haven't had a drink since I came home. Then he looked right at me. And I was sitting there thinking, you know, Bob, a drink might not hurt you a little bit. He never did drink. I love AA, did I mention that? I love to drink. You're looking at an alcoholic that only drank beer. I'm a beer drinker, and I'm not here to try to one-up anybody. If you drank whiskey, don't bother telling me after the meeting. I don't care. No disrespect. I drank Budweiser because I loved it. Yeah, I love everything about Budweiser, and I got to tell you something. Sometimes I miss it. I miss it so much some days when I see the Clydesdales in a parade, I weep. When I drive by a Budweiser billboard, I got to slow down and have a moment of silence. I love Budweiser, and I can't tell you why, because I don't like how it tastes. And I do like a little fine wine, like Ripple. Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. Yeah, you know where the sixth section is here tonight, don't you? Now, you know why I like Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill? Because when I puke, it looks like I'm bleeding internally. Them amateur drinkers don't understand what's going on. They ask me what's wrong, and I make something up. I lie. I say I'm dying from terminal stomach something. And they always fall for it, and they always buy me a Budweiser. Until they get to know me, and then I got to switch home group bars. And I also like a little Mad Dog 2020. Now, if you notice, none of those three calibers of wine have corks. Now, if you drink like I drank at the end of my drinking, which meant having a quart bottle of Bud that had been emptied, and I go around to the various trash cans behind taverns, liquor stores, and I empty out whatever I can out of the empties, and that's what I drink. And I got to tell you something. If you drink like that, it's going to give you a condition I'm sure you've heard about in Honolulu, but I'm going to make sure you did. It's called alcoholic terminal diarrhea. I had diarrhea for 6 years, one day at a time. I ain't lying to you. I went to my home group in that condition, and I had my own table. When you've had diarrhea for 6 years, you've got to have good decision-making skills. And split-second timing. My sponsor suggested to me that my first spiritual awakening was probably going to be a solid bowel movement. And let me tell you, I agreed. So I told you I'm a puker. I got to also tell you that I'm a projectile puker because I've got false teeth. I got to tell you something. Ignore your teeth. They will go away. And those that don't, the policeman took. Because I'd have swore when he said shut up, he said stand up. And so I've got store-bought welfare false teeth that don't fit. And so when I puke, I'm a projectile. By the way, I could always escape my wife's hitting on me because I got too drunk the night before, or she might have retaliated against the way I treated her the day before. She knew if I got a certain amount of intoxication, I couldn't beat her. She'd jump on board my back and just pound my head as hard as she could, but I knew if I could get into the bathroom, she'd fall off and leave me alone because she's not coming in there. Because bad things happened in my toilet. I would get into the bathroom, and by God, as soon as my head crossed the threshold, she was off my back. It was a moral victory. And then all of a sudden, it'd come upon me, just like every one of you that's been there know. It would all come upon me at once, and I'd be bound before the ivory altar. And all of a sudden, my denture would blow out right into the stool. And I would watch my denture in slow motion. You know how good things go by like that? Bad things go like this? You get to watch it in slow-mo. And I'm watching my denture go. Now, it occurs to me, if I don't get them before they get down the shooter, they're going to be gone for good. So I go in after them. and I catch them right before they get to the bottom, and then I think to myself, ah, what the hell, I rinse them off and put them right back in. I sure miss drinking. My sponsor says that makes me a non-glamorous AA. Now, if that offends anybody's civilities in this room, you might need to go to the other fellowship. People have actually come up and told me I shouldn't tell that story. If you're alcoholic of my type, you identify the degradation and how I felt about myself. That ain't where I started drinking, but that was near the end of my drinking. In November 1972, I want to take you back where I was when I started what I believed to be my physical bottom. I was sleeping in a dumpster behind Larry's Oasis. They got one right across the street. I've already spotted it. They do. Me and my host and hostess were walking by there, and I had a moment. Where were you at, Gain? Yeah, remember? They'd thrown away some sushi, and it was still in the wrapper. Now, I'm 27 years sober, and I looked at it for a minute, and Gain says, what are you looking at that for? I wasn't going to eat it. I'm civilized now. I was just having a vicarious moment. But you got to understand, if you look at me today, newcomer, you can't believe that story. But if you could have seen me then, you could easily believe it, because at that time I weighed 146 pounds. Right this minute I weigh 260, at least that's what I weighed at the gym this morning. And I'm pretty healthy. I feel good about myself. Back then I weighed 146 pounds. I didn't have any teeth. I had long hair down to my butt, and I stunk. I had a stench about me that no amount of showers would take off in one day. And I'm sleeping in that dumpster down there behind Larry's Oasis, and I heard a knock on my dumpster lid. And I was home. And I'm wondering who's out there. Because I know it ain't the dumpster pickup man. When you live in a dumpster, you damn well better know when they're coming. Curiosity got the best of me. I had to know who was out there. You know how we are. I got to know. I got to know Nor. I'm not a man's man. I'm a thinking man's thinker. I've sunk everything. I opened up the lid to my dumpster. You know who was looking down at me? It was my daddy. And I didn't see that look in his eye that I attributed all my problems to. I didn't see that look of terror. I didn't see that look that he was going to do the things to me and my mom and my brother and everybody else. Because my dad he was tough. God bless his soul. My dad was a truck driver for 32 years and he loved to fight. You put whiskey in him, and he'll fight everybody he can see. I hated his guts. I blamed him for my existence. I loathed my own father. And there he is looking down at me, and I'm sitting in a dumpster. And I want him to go away. But I didn't understand that look in his eye. He'd gone to this thing called A&A. But he didn't mention that day. You know, he was paying a 12-step call on me. I didn't know that either. Here's what he said to me. Wayne, do you want to come home? And I looked around my dumpster. Some of you are going to understand this, and some of you won't be able to comprehend it. But I looked around my dumpster and I said, no thanks, Dad, I'm doing fine. I got to tell you something. I was. Nobody was bothering me. The wife and the two kids and the madness was no longer there. I loved it in my little dumpster because the world didn't bother me. I finally found a place where I felt safe. And it was worth the loneliness. It was worth the hideous four horsemen meeting me every day. I'm going to find out where I'm going to get something to eat. And I got to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, that's spiritual bankruptcy. When I made peace with living in a dumpster. And when my dad said, "Do you want to come home?" "No, no, I don't." And then he left, and then I did too, because now I know he knows where I'm at. I'm already restless, irritable, and discontent. Let me tell you something. God works in mysterious ways. I no longer challenge His way. I bailed out of that dumpster November 1972, and I went on that walk that every one of us in this room, be you alcoholics of my type, we've made that walk. Mine started from a dumpster. And if you don't identify with that and you're thinking, "Well, I'm not like him, so I'm not alcoholic," that thought qualifies you for AA. Some people's bottom starts out in a 3-inch carpet they're face down stuck to. Some people's bottom starts in that Cadillac they parked on the front porch the night before. Some people's bottom, like my sponsor Barney, was sitting in a rocking chair nursing a bottle of Kessler's while life passed him by. That was my sponsor's bottom. Can you believe that? He went to AA because he got tired of drinking Kessler's in a rocking chair alone. I thought, that's your bottom, Barney? He says, "No, you are." He didn't need to add that. I bailed out of that dumpster, 146 pounds, human stench, filthy, same clothes 3-4 months at a time, and I don't even know where I'm going. My chest, my ribs are exposed, my face is sunken and gaunt, and I think I'm okay. I think I'm okay. Until 2 o'clock in the morning when the alcoholic wake-up call comes, when there's nobody around but me. And I can't stand it another minute. I remember I walked past this restaurant about midnight called Harvey's Restaurant in Moline, Illinois. I looked inside and I spotted this little old lady, must have been about 800 years old, wiping down the coffee bar. I immediately sized her up because I know how to size up people when I want something. I knew I could work her. I could tell by the look in her face. I knew I could work her. So I went in and I did the drill. I sat down, she walks over, she brings me a glass of water, and she says, "What can I do for you, sweetie?" Nobody's called me sweetie in a long time. And I stunk. I could smell myself. I'm okay with it until I'm around people. Then I'm embarrassed. Isn't that interesting? She says, "What can I do for you?" And I started telling her about the alcoholic home. I told her about the violence, the guns going off, the fist fights, the domestic violence. I told her about myself being sexually assaulted by 3 men in my family, which is the truth. And then I told her about the retarded class they put me in because they misdiagnosed me. I got put in the short bus class. I got to admit I improved. And then I told her about Vietnam. And then I told her about my dumpster. "I'm here to report to you." She had tears flowing down her eyes. And I tell you, I almost cried myself. It was so sad. I got to tell you why she was crying. I thought it was because of my story. You know why she was crying? Come to find out later, her husband Harvey was in this thing called ANA. And he's suffering. And he needed an alcoholic to work with. And guess who shows up? She kept me there so Harvey could grab me. She wasn't crying because of my story. She was crying because she knew Harvey might get some relief. God is using me already. So I sleep there for a couple of nights out in the parking lot. One night Harvey comes in. Harvey stands about this big. God bless him. He was, you know, I used to think I was really ugly until I met Harvey. I couldn't look in the mirror. I'm so ugly. Harvey comes in. He's got his hand in his pocket. And he says, "Heard you need some help, kid." Now, my mind meant money, food, shelter. He didn't tell me he was in AA. He tricked me. You see, he had a little bit of information that his wife gave him unbeknownst to me. While I'm pouring my heart out to this woman, she's going home giving it all to him, so he's ready for me. So Harvey pulls a hand out of his pocket. He's got this brass coin in it. And one side has got these two A's. And on the other side has got this prayer, God grant me something. I noticed it didn't say nothing about money, food, or shelter, so I wasn't really interested. But I figured I'm going to have to play along with this creep if I want to get what I want. So he does what the old timers do. He put the coin in my hand, shook my hand, and wouldn't let go. I wanted him to let go, but he wouldn't. When they get a hold of a newcomer, they hang on to him. He says to me, he says, you take this coin tomorrow about noontime down to 410 16th Street in the basement. You tell them Harvey sent you. They're friends of mine. They're going to be expecting you. Now, he never mentioned it was AA because he knew about my history. You see, I've been psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times. I like it there. I was a self-sign-in 15 times. Now I'm going to tell you why in case you have a little slippy-poo. You know, it gets lonely out there, doesn't it? Given the way I acted and the way I drank, I couldn't get a date out there to save my life. But you put me in a co-ed psych ward. I'm a pretty charming fella. I ain't got no teeth, but I don't care. I'd wait till she took her Thorazine. I'd make my plan, because I knew she could not run me with that stuff on board. And then I'd forget and take mine. And just as I was ready to make the plan happen, I couldn't catch her. By the way, ladies, AA is a lot like that sometimes. By the way, ladies, I heard there's a dance tonight. Now, if I come up to you tonight during the dance and you're in your first year, now, if I approach you, I may say something like this. And if I do, I want you to do something. And I might even posture a little bit. I might do it like this. I might say, hey, want to go have coffee? And talk about God? If I do that, run! So Harvey tells me that when I get there to look down in the cellarway and there'd be a light bulb hanging on a cord. Harvey told me if that light was on, go right on in. They're there. I had no idea where I was going, but I was hungry, lonely, and wanted a place to live. I'm going anywhere. So I got that coin in my hand, and folks, if he'd have told me I was going to AA, I would have never went because I realized, yeah, I've got problems, but I ain't no alcoholic. All I drink is beer. I didn't even know about fine wine until I got to AA. So I go there the next day, and I got that coin in my hand, and I find the address in the worst part of Moline, of course. And AA's in the basement, of course. I don't know what's AA. So I look down there, and I look for the light bulb. Harvey said, light on, go in. I memorized that part. Light on, go in. You ever had to do that? You know what this is, don't you? It's called alcoholic neurobics. Bill said some of us were a little bit neurotic. So I looked down the cellar way and I spot the light bulb and I went right into memory mode. Harvey said on, go in, but the light wouldn't stay on. It was flickering. It was blinking. And I thought, what the hell does that mean? Why is it blinking? I can't call Harvey. So I stand there waiting for it to stop blinking. And I can't go in unless it stops blinking because I follow the rules. I'm a rule follower when I want something free. I couldn't take it. It made me crazy. So I left. I couldn't go in. The light wouldn't stop blinking. I went to Larry's Oasis. Larry let me in. I mooshed a few Budweisers. And by the time 8 o'clock rolled around, I was oiled up again. And about 7:35, 7:40, I don't know, it occurred to me they owe me now. You ever get like that? Because now I've been thinking. See? They owe me. Now I'm going to go get what I got coming. And some say I did. I get back there right about 8 o'clock, and I ain't looking for the light bulb now because I've got just enough Budweiser on board. I don't care if it's on or gone. I'm going in. So I went charging through that basement doorway. I failed to notice that door header was 5'10"-ish. I'm 6'3"-ish. And I went in like a bull in a china shop. You ever done that? That door header hit me right across the eyebrow. The impact lifted me off of my feet, and I slid into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if you're having a hard time believing that, oh well. Inside the door, about 6 feet, was this round table, like that, with six or seven old men sitting around it, I assumed waiting to talk about dying. The youngest one at the table was 57. The oldest was a guy by the name of Corky, who was 84. And I slid right between two of them. And this old one gets up out of his chair and he looks down at me and he goes just like this. He gave me the safe sign. And then he growled at me. He said, slide right in here, dummy. We got a wrench to fit every nut that comes in the door. And I'm flat on my back on the ground looking up at my soon-to-be sponsor. And I said, my name's Wayne. He says, I got it, dummy. He says, my name's Barney. And then he uttered three words that made me crazy. He says, I'm an alcoholic. And then he says, and I'm going to be your sponsor. It's the happiest moment of my life. You might wonder why, since I've never been to AA before. I've had a sponsor before. When I played baseball for Anheuser-Busch. When I played softball for Larry's Oasis, we had a sponsor. They paid our entry fee. They bought us uniforms. And they bought the beer. So when Barney says, I'm going to be your sponsor, I'm with you, man. You bet. And for the next 5 years, I went to meetings every day and drank every day. I could not drink. It wasn't because I wasn't working a program. You got to get sober before you drink for not working a program. You know what I mean? 5 years, I went to meetings every day. My sponsor said, I want you to meet him. Yes, sir. He never said sober. He said, I want you to meet him. He says he told me that, but I don't remember. I went to meetings every day. I drank before meetings. I drank after meetings. At the end, I couldn't stand you anymore. I drank during meetings if I could get away with it. It don't get no more hopeless than that, sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, figuring out how you're going to drink that beer you got in your pocket. I remember my sponsor said to me one day, you know, dummy, I said, yeah. He said, you know this program tends to work better if you don't drink? That never occurred to me. I tested every rule we don't have. My home group had this silly rule about being quiet during the meeting. But someone told me we have no rules, so I tested every one of them. 4 years drinking, going to meetings. I walked into my home group 15 minutes late, made my appearance. I'd been sitting down at Larry's Oasis getting oiled up, contemplating allowing you to help me, because you said when you helped me, it made you feel good about yourself, so I wanted to let you help me all the time. So I had just enough Budweiser on board. About 8:15, I decided to go to the meeting and let you help me. I was pretty spiritual when I walked in there. Speaker was speaking, and I was disrupting the meeting like I always do, because I have absolutely no regard for nobody else. I could care less if you drink or not. It's all about me. So I walked in late, disrupted the speaker, making my presence known to everybody around me, and I guess that was just the day they'd had enough. One of the old-timers gets up and he says, you know, you got to quiet down, you're disturbing this meeting. And I lost all that spirituality I floated in there with. I don't like to be confronted. And I said, I don't want to. Another one got up, says, you got to sit down, you're disturbing this meeting. I looked at him and I said, I don't have to. Another one got up and says, you got to leave. Now, you're welcome to come back tomorrow if you can act right. But we have a right to an undisturbed, undistracted message. These newcomers are having hard enough time paying attention. They don't need your help being distracted. So if you can come back tomorrow and act accordingly, you're welcome. We don't kick nobody out of AA, no matter how deviant they are. But we do get to have an appropriate meeting for a newcomer, so you've got to leave right now. And I looked at him, and I said, you can't make me. Oh, yes, they can. You see those two boys right there? About four guys their size. They must have went to detox and got them. I never saw them before. I wasn't ready for them to get into action, I'll tell you. Each one grabbed arm and leg. Talked some newcomer and holding the door open. I noticed as I flew by. And just as I landed out in the street, I heard my sponsor yell out, keep coming back! I did. You see, I didn't know what was wrong with me, ladies and gentlemen. Perhaps if I knew what was wrong with me, I could accept the diagnosis. But nobody diagnosed me. They talked about themselves all the time. I have a problem with some AA words, too. I don't like self-centered. I like narcissistic. Sounds more clinical. I remember I told my sponsor one time, Barney, I'm not self-centered. I'm narcissistic. Without even losing hesitation, he says, not only that. It's almost like they stay up at night waiting. He said, not only are you narcissistic, dummy, you are narcissistically incestuous. See, I thought I had him. And I went like this. What? Because, see, I hit and run. I thought I had him. He says, you're narcissistically incestuous. I said, what's that? He says, that's where you, no matter what you do, butler, you continue to screw yourself. I hated his guts. I need to mention to you, he was my sponsor for 29 years, 5 months, and 4 days. He died 3 years ago. And I hope if you're new, I hope one day you get to feel the pain I feel. It's not a victim pain like it used to be. It's a pain of having known one of the greatest loves there is. Absolute, complete, unconditional acceptance without needing to have his approval. I've never known that in my life. And I need you to know something, newcomer. I miss my sponsor. But he's here with me right now. And when you leave this weekend, some of you will think about this guy named Barney. And together we'll keep him alive in AA. Because we need the spirit of those old timers. I hope some of you was at the old timer meeting today. I love the old timer meeting. Scares me a little bit. Because I know I may get there one day at a time. I already can't remember half the stuff I'm going to tell you tonight. November 8, 1977, I had no idea it was going to be the day I took my last drink. If I did, I'd have drank a whole lot more. November 7th, I was in my dumpster. By the way, his name is Larry Hergert. He's the guy that owned Larry's Oasis. Him and I were dearest friends. Larry Hergert now owns a bar in Davenport, Iowa called Larry Bob's Oasis. Guess why he nicknamed it Bob's? Because I always tell that story about Bob. Big Book Bob. So he named his bar Larry Bob's Oasis. It's still running very successfully in Davenport, Iowa. And if you're ever in the neighborhood, feel free to stop by and say, do you know a guy named Wayne B.? And he'll get a grin across his face because he loved me like my own brother. He couldn't stop me from drinking, though. And he was watching me die a day at a time. Everybody was watching me die a day at a time. And there was no power on earth that could stop it. None at all. Until I met Harvey. Isn't that interesting how those circumstances took place? That brass coin burned a hole in my pocket. That 5 years I drank and went to meetings was some of the worst moments of my life. Because I somehow knew there was an answer that I wasn't tapping into. You know, it's lonely after you've been to AA and then you're sitting in a dumpster thinking about life. Especially if you have what's called alcoholism, such as I do. You see, because November 8, 1977 could have turned out a whole lot different had it not been for you and Bill and Bob and how they put this program on a foundation that couldn't be unearthed by a loco newcomer like me. They built the foundation so that when I showed up, it was strong enough to tolerate my illness. That's love. Have I mentioned I love AA? Let me tell you about my condition, then I'm going to get sober. I think it's important. A lot of people don't know. They think alcoholism, drink, don't drink, you're okay. You know what? Sobriety is my problem, ladies and gentlemen. That's why I have to work the steps. When I said the fellowship will drive me to drink, I meant it. I've been sober long enough now, I don't have a pink cloud anymore. I recognize you people now. You're out there. With all your personalities. I was on a pink cloud for 5 years. You hear me? Now, I'm not going to tell anybody it's on a pink cloud that you should force your way off it. I don't think you need to. Life has a way of assisting us with that. But if you've come to AA and you've been wonderful ever since and you haven't had to do what's in the big book, you're either not alcoholic by definition or you're on a pink cloud. And I hope you enjoy it. I only suggest you pack your pink parachute. You see, for the first 5 years, I wasn't happy. I was delusional. There was absolutely no reason for me to be happy. I just was. Everything in my life was horrible, but I was happy, happy, happy. And then when I was 5 years sober, I came home from an AA dance and found my wife in bed with my sponsee. Apparently, he wanted what I had. And was willing to go to any length to get it. That was 22 and a half years ago. I miss my sponsee. I love AA. You see, I suffer from a condition called alcoholism. And if you're new, I want to take you through just a little bit of what it means to me to have what's called alcoholism. ISM. It's in our big book. I've taken the liberty of mixing it up a little bit, if you will. But it's still in there. ISM. Internal spiritual maladjustment. That's what I suffer from. I suffer from an illness of the mind and the emotion, says Dr. Silkworth in my book. I suffer from an illness of the mind and the emotion coupled with an underlying soul sickness, and alcohol has some extemporaneous ability to fix it. You know what I mean? Now, here's the interesting part. How would I describe that? Let's do it metaphorically. My mind and my emotions. I'd like to describe my thinking for you for just a minute. I think I was born like this. My head isn't round, though it may look it tonight. It's really square. It's much like a Rubik's Cube. And now let me explain the theory of a Rubik's Cube for just a moment. A Rubik's Cube has 27 little cubes. And on each little cube is 6 sides. That's 162 independent sides. Take off all the colors and you have 34 quintillion possible combination mathematically. That's a lot like my thinking. I have a lot of old ideas. And when I don't like one, I just go like this. Click. You've seen people in meetings going like that. And if I don't like the station, I just... You'll know it. Like maybe I'm sitting there looking at Ike. And me and Ike are having a great conversation. Then all of a sudden, while Ike's talking, he notices by looking in my eyes, I'm not there anymore. I'm looking right at him, but click. And he looks at me and he noticed my eyes have glazed over. Then he goes, hey, what? What? Did you just hear what I said? Yeah, shut up. And my emotions are like a broken Maytag washing machine. I seem to have been born without a normal cycle. And I've been stuck on agitate and spin. Interestingly enough, if you lift the tub, pour in a couple of long neck Budweisers, it balances the load. It ain't supposed to do that. See, Dr. Silkworth tells me that abnormal drinkers like me drink essentially because I like the effect produced by alcohol. The effect produced. And he says it's an abnormal reaction that doesn't happen to any other kind of drinker, not the heavy, the social, the moderate, only the alcoholic. And what that means is when I'm on agitating spin, and I'm a-clicking and a-clicking, I'm feeling separate, different, and alone. The world's against me. I feel like a human turd floating around the punch bowl of life. And you're out there saying, oh, how'd that get in there? Get it out of here. You're not saying that. I'm thinking that. He put 4 or 5 Budweisers in me. I'm so damn good looking, I can't stand it. I need to tell you about my first drinking experience. It's my experience. That's why I get to tell you. I was in a retarded class. I mean, no disrespect. If you have a child who's organically challenged, please don't take this as disrespect. I was diagnosed retarded, put in a retarded class in eighth grade. I improved. They kept me there. I stayed in a retarded class and lived in a group home all through school. When I graduated high school, I graduated the retarded class. If Vietnam hadn't have been going on, I would still be in a group home. And I'm not going to bore you with those details. How in God's name? I'll tell you, when I was a senior, Tom, who took us kids on field trips, like me, I was his favorite. He said I was brighter than the rest. Now, I live in a group home. I don't know what girls are. So I'm at the senior dance, having gone through 12 grades of school, living in a group home for four, and I'm afraid of everything. And I think I'm the ugliest thing God put on earth. I can't stand myself inside. And there's a lot of madness going on at my folks' house. Tom walks over and gives me a long brown bottle with a red, white, and blue label. Budweiser. He said, here, kid, drink this. It'll make you feel better. I said, okay, Tom. I drank it, and I said, Tom, that tastes terrible. I want a Pepsi-Cola. Tom says, that's okay, kid. You'll get used to it. Now, here's what Tom meant. Because, you see, Tom, to this very day, he's 58 years old. I'm 55. He graduated before I did. He was taking us. We were like a field trip for him. He's my friend today. He cannot explain what happened to me to people. He thinks you're an unretarding program. He does. He doesn't understand. I haven't explained it to him because he doesn't need the explanation. But you see what happened to Tom the first time he drank and got drunk. Here's what happened. He said he got dizzy, disorientated, peed in his dresser, and almost went crazy trying to flush it. And he swore to himself he was never going to do that again. And by his own word, he's never repeated that act since to this day. He's a normal drinker. That's what he meant when he said, I'd get used to it. Ladies and gentlemen, that's not what happened to me. I went from 6'3", 120 pounds with the biggest thing on my body, an infected pimple, ugly and retarded, to some good looking. I looked down on everybody. I was hip. I looked out on the dance floor and eyeballed me a blue-eyed blonde dancing with some loser. I walked right up and asked her if I could cut in, and she danced with me. Later that night, we found out sex meant two people. Oh, quit looking away. We didn't know that. See, they didn't tell us kids in retarded class about sex. They was hoping to God we'd never reproduce. She screwed up my sex life forever. You see, I've been having sex since I was 13, and I thought I was quite the expert. She complicated the entire procedure. Swore I was never doing that again. I don't mean drink. That was my first drink, and my last drink was on November 8, 1977. How it went from where it went to where it came, I can't explain. All I know is the night of November 7th, my sponsor got me to give him my word. He's never asked for my word before. He's never asked me to promise not to drink. Here's what he asked me. He says, I want you to give me your word, dummy, that you'll go the rest of this night without a drink, just tonight. And then you meet me tomorrow at noon at the meeting. Help me set up for the meeting. And we've been doing this dance of death for 5 years. And for some reason, I said to Barney, in a boast, in a brag, in a moment of grandiosity. You know what grandiosity is, don't you? Let me help. Maybe you can explain it at my little level. Grandiosity is when I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I see Bill and Bob's picture on the wall, and I visualize mine floating up between them. I said, you got my word. I wanted to take it back. You see, there's three words I've not said since I started going to those meetings with him. Remember when he said, "I'm Barney, I'm an alcoholic"? I made a commitment I'd never say those three words, and for 5 years I hadn't. I'd been going to meetings and say, "Yeah, I drink. Well, maybe I got a problem. Well, maybe one day I'll have a desire to stop drinking." November 8, 1977, midnight 01, it occurs to me it's a new day. Do I got to keep my word? You hear me? I told him I wouldn't drink all night. Well, night ends at midnight. But I wasn't sure, so I waited. And that morning I'm walking to meet Barney at the noon meeting of the Moline group. And about 9 o'clock I can't take it anymore and I stop. You see, I haven't had enough to drink the past few days. And I stopped and stole a six-pack of Budweiser. And went to the noon meeting. Got there about 9:15. Because he said, be there early. And I'm anal. That's why we need Dr. Bob the proctologist. I sit down on the front steps, and I start drinking that six-pack of Budweiser. I had three empty cans on the ground, drank, with every intention of drinking the other three. Every intention. And guess who shows up early for the meeting? Barney. He comes walking up on me, and now I'm guilty. I wasn't guilty till he showed up. The beer tasted good till Barney showed up. He comes walking up to me, and he does what them old-timers do. Let me do a sidebar here. I'm going to tell you what I love more than anything about our program. It's our book, and I'll tell you why. There is no judgment in our book. My book doesn't judge me. People who interpret it do. My book doesn't judge me. There is no judgment in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's only open-ended invitations for anybody, no matter who they are. No matter what color, race, creed, or religion. Only people who interpret that book put judgment on other people. Isn't that true? I know, I'm a judger. I judged all you when I got up here. Just like some of you judging me. I forgive you. Barney comes walking up to me. Doesn't even look at those three empty cans of beer. Does something worse. He looks me right in the eye. Causing me to look at the beer. Now I'm guilty. Yeah, I know they ain't going to taste good no more. Barney says to me, "Dummy." I said, "Yes, sir." "Why don't you come in and help me set up for the meeting?" I said, "I'll be right in." And I was going to drink those other three cans of beer, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody in this room knows when it's going to be somebody's last drink for sure. Not for sure. I didn't know. Because something overcame me. I believe God. Maybe not. I don't know. But I hid those other three cans of beer in the bush, and I went in to help Barney set up for the meeting. And then I forgot myself and sat down at the arounder table over in the shoebox. Now, every group's got a shoebox. You know what the shoebox is, don't you? That's where all of us slippers, runners, sneakers, and AA loafers hang out. Well, I sat down at the arounder table because Barney wouldn't let me at the newcomer table because newcomer tables for newcomers never been ate before and they don't want me influencing them. So I wasn't allowed to go up to the newcomer table. And Barney's up at the newcomer bar talking to a brand new newcomer. I couldn't stand this guy. I hated him because he was getting Barney's attention and I wasn't. Barney said, "Pray for him." So I did, and he never did die. So I'm sitting there. And about 11:45, another newcomer came flying through the door, tripping over the threshold. We believe his wife pushed him in and left. I noticed my sponsor was busy with his newcomer. And I realized I wasn't drunk. I'd only had three cans of beer. I was pretty lucid. So I got up and went up and did what Barney did 5 years earlier. I grabbed him by the hand and I said, "Hi. I'm Wayne B. I'm an alcoholic." Oh, I knew it was out. And I thought, well, what the hell? And I'm going to be your sponsor. That's what Barney did. And I can't ask his opinion. He's busy with his newcomer. So I said to we'll call him Jim. My name's Wayne B. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to be your sponsor. He goes like this. What's a sponsor? Oh. Wouldn't you know the very first question pissed me off. I don't know why I can't ask Barney. So I looked at him and I gave him the answer I gave all them newcomers. Shut up. Okay. Now Barney was within earshot. He abandoned his newcomer to come poach mine. So I pushed Jim around me like this. Because I think Barney's going to get him. Barney whispers in my ear. Do you know Barney held my life in his hands? Barney held my life in his hands. He could have said something that's popular in here, although it has no foundation in AA principle. He could have said to me, dummy, you can't sponsor him till you've been sober a year. Have you heard that one? Or how about this? He could have said, dummy, you can't sponsor him till you've worked all 12 steps. That ain't a book. Aren't you glad no one told Bill Wilson to wait? Bill, could you imagine? Just think about that. Let's have some fun with this for a minute. Could you imagine back there in 1934, Bill Wilson got sober in December? He didn't found AA with Dr. Bob until June 10th, 1935. The first cases he worked with failed miserably, could not get sober. Couldn't you imagine us today? You know, Bill, you might want to work on your technique, Bill. Bill, have you worked all 12 steps you haven't wrote yet? Bill, didn't a guy just hang himself in your house? Bill, there's something wrong with your approach. You know, sometimes the good is the enemy of the best. Working with others, that's the deal. Oh, I'm a much more effective sponsor today because I have a lot more experience. But I'll tell you what Barney did. He loved this program so much he didn't corrupt it. He whispered in my ear, dummy. And I thought, don't listen to him, Jim. I didn't want my sponsor to hear him call me dummy. My sponsor. He said, dummy. I said, what? He whispers in my ear, do you mind if I co-sponsor him? Click. No! No, you can't! He's mine! You've had my ass for 5 years! It's my turn! That's not what I said. That's what I thought. What I said was okay. Now, what Barney didn't tell me was later on, after he got between me and Jim, he says to Jim behind my back, Jim, I'm going to sponsor you, but let's let Wayne think he is. I gave him his 10-year chip thinking I was his sponsor. These old timers are evil. And then Barney says to me and Jimmy, if you two clowns expect to stay sober, get out of here right now and go grab newcomers. Grab them. So me and Jim got together and had a group unconscious. We're trying to make a decision about where to find them newcomers. We didn't need to ask Barney. There's two of us, one of him. And I had more time on Jim by 3 hours. So we decided to go to taverns looking for newcomers. It only took a couple of times to talk to those that were awake to know that that's going to get violent. So we started coming up to people with their head on the bar. And if their head was on the bar at 10:30 at night, it came to it, the midnight meeting of the Moline Group, Alcoholics Anonymous. By the time me and Jimmy had 90 days, we sponsored about 37 people. We did. We didn't know what the hell we were doing, but that's the beauty of it. You don't gotta know. This ain't about what I know. This is about God. God's in charge. Why does he get him here? Me and Jimmy thought we should get a purple big book. We was saving the world. What we didn't know was Barney and the other old timers were protecting them from us. But we were trying. We were working with others. The beauty of that, sometimes AA, somehow is being turned into a treatment program. We are not a treatment program. We are just a fellowship of men and women. One alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic about themselves, not about how they need to live their life. That's the God part. I don't know what you're supposed to do, though I did work on that for a while. I want to tell you about my sponsor. November 8, 1977 is my sobriety date. On Thanksgiving weekend, I was 3 minutes sober. And my sponsor said, I'm going to take you to a convention, dummy. There's going to be 1,200 sober alcoholics. They're friends of mine. Really? All of them? He said, yeah, and they want to meet you. But Barney, I ain't got no teeth. He said, they don't care. So Barney, being the old-timer he is, he didn't humiliate me. He didn't talk down to me. He didn't say, you smell. Instead, to get me ready for that convention, he says to me, dummy. I said, yes, sir. He said, AA is a program of attraction. And you are quite the distraction. He says, do you mind if I buy you a new set of clothes? Yeah. He tricked me. I'm thinking I'm going to go to Sears. Or Montgomery Ward. He takes me to Salvation Army. Yeah, he says, if that bothers you, just tell him we went to Salvadori's. Now, this is November 1977, ladies and gentlemen. The disco era has been gone everywhere except the Salvation Army. Now, I ain't got no teeth, and I smell. I'm 6 foot, 346 pounds, and we're getting the gift. Takes me to Salvation Army, and the only suit, because he wants me to wear a suit to meet these people. The only suit they got at the Salvation Army was this lime green. Double knit polyester leisure suit. With bright yellow lining. And dark green tennis rackets. So we bought it. We went to the shirt department and got me this brushed polyester disco shirt. Collars down to here. Had animals around it. And only 2 buttons from the manufacturer. Remember them? One here and one here. That's it. He made me wear a tie with it. Then we went to the shoe department where the only 13.5-inch gunboats they had in supply was a pair of black and brown box-toed Oxford disco shoes with a 2.5-inch platform sole and a 4-inch heel. We got out of there for $1.85.
He dressed me up, took me to that convention, stood me at the front door, and made me a greeter.
Oh, we're getting the gift now.
So I'm hearing these rumors. We don't laugh at you. We laugh with you. You know, those rumors. See, part of the problem with my clickety-clickety-click is laughing with means I am too. I wasn't laughing. The speakers at that convention was a guy by the name of Chuck Chamberlain. Norm Alpe. I hope you've heard their tapes since they passed. Dottie Shore. Tom Brady Jr. They've all four passed to the big meeting. A guy by the name of Clancy I and Johnny H. And every single one of them laughed at me. Chuck C. went just like this. He tried not to. He really did. He was going to shake my hand, but he couldn't do it. He looked at me, he goes, I'm crying. Barney, goddammit, are they laughing at me? He goes like this. Well, yeah. Yeah, they are. You are a sight to behold. And then he says, you know what, dummy? I said, what? He says, if you ever learn to laugh at yourself, you'll never be left unamused. I hated his guts. I fell in love with AA that weekend. And you know, the journey ever since has been a series of ups and downs, just like everybody in this room knows. It goes without saying, I'm human. I'm subject to the human condition. I'm glad I know that today. I didn't know that for a long time. The process of 12 suggested steps, as I say, kept me sober in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, a lot of people these days leave an AA and then they get drunk. That's called, if you don't work the steps, the fellowship can drive you to a point of thirst. It can. It's not a slander on our program. You talk about, I'm sicker now than I ever was, so crank it. When I was drinking, I had something to keep it down, just a little. I heard my sponsor say a lot of, newcomer, I want to share something with you before I stop. I want to share you that my sponsor told me that I have a distorted perception of reality because disease of perception is not my problem. Alcohol, not my problem. Those are symptoms of a greater problem. You see, I have a perception problem because I have a broken spirit. I don't have a perception problem as much as I once did. It's healing because my spirit's healing here in AA. That's the truth. And I'll tell you why I know that. I was sober a few minutes when my sponsor took me to a meeting in Chicago, Illinois. I wasn't sober very long, but I didn't have any teeth, and I was clicking and clacking. And I had my sponsee, Jimmy, with me. He's got all his teeth. That really bothered me, too. Here, I'm his sponsor, and I ain't got no teeth. And he's always like, found out later he's gay. My sponsor takes me to a meeting in Chicago, and he sits in the front row. It's an old fire station called the Mustard Seed Group in Chicago, Illinois. And there's this old-timer up there, happened to be of color, giving a lead. And I'm sitting there behind my sponsor, and I'm wanting to make sure Jimmy doesn't get influenced by this guy. So I'm interpreting the speaker, just like some of you are right now. This guy's talking, and he says something that fragments my mind. And I'm here to protect my sponsee, Jimmy, from bad news. So I says to Jimmy, and by the way, unbeknownst to me, I'm being as loud then as I am right now. Credit to the speaker, he ignored me and kept talking. But I said, Jimmy, don't listen to him. He's lying. He couldn't have done that. He'd be locked up in prison the rest of his life. Don't worry, Jim. I got your back. The guy keeps talking. Then he says something else. And I said, oh, Jim, we might have to go. He couldn't have drank like that. He'd been locked up in a psych ward. I know. I was there 17 times, Jim. And then this guy keeps talking. And then he said the one that took me over the top. And I said, oh, Jesus Christ. Jim, we got to go. And my sponsor, he'd been putting up with it the whole time. Pretty soon, he turns around, he looks at me, right in the middle of my caution to Jim. And here's what I heard him say. Shut up, you goddamn loser. If you ever got anything to say we want to hear, we'll come out to that car we pulled you out of behind Harvey's restaurant. We'll toot to the horn and invite you to share. Now, until then, keep your damn mouth shut or leave. That's what I heard him say. Here's what he really said. Shh. I hear funny. I hope we've had a lot of fun tonight. Hope you heard the message. I saved the program stuff for Jim for tomorrow night. I did. I love A, and I love sharing my story. I know Jim will give a good program pitch tomorrow night. If you're new and you identify with me, I'm sorry. And if you're laughing, you are so screwed. My time is up, I think. I didn't pay attention to what time I got up here, but I think I'm done. I just want to leave you with this. When I tell you I love AA, what that means is I shoot up and show up when I'm asked where I'm asked, and I do the best I can with what God's given me. But I have come to understand something. This is a God thing. I have come to believe that, and it was a very difficult ride for me because I did not want to believe that. I believe that God manifests himself in and through AA. I don't need to understand anything about the dichotomy of God. I see it before me. I see it in the eyes of a newcomer. I've seen it out there on the street walking around. I do a lot of walking around. There's a poem written about Samuel Shoemaker that his wife Helen published in a book called I Stand by the Door. It's AA's manifest destiny. He talks about those of us in AA that we must all be door standers. Stand by the door to catch that newcomer coming by that can't even see that there is a door. And make sure that they get their hand on the latch because it only opens to their hand, not mine. Their door won't open to my hand. It has to open to their hand. And that's what we do here, ladies and gentlemen, I believe, is we open the door for each other. I want to make sure that newcomer at least gets her hand on that latch and then I tell them how to open it. And then my job in AA, because my new employer directs me in the book, and my new employer is finally not me. My new employer, I mean no disrespect to sponsorship. My sponsorship's not my new employer. None of you are, thank God. Because if you were, I'd have to try for your approval. And when I try for your approval, I drink. I love this thing. It's given me the three things that nothing else can give me. Freedom from the bondage of self, threefold. Newcomer, I'll leave you with this thought. I am glad to know there's only two things AA offers me. It isn't the house, the car, the wife, the job, the career, none of that stuff. Everybody gets that just for working. AA offers me and you two things. First one, and this is in the big book, victory over alcohol. And the second one is freedom from the bondage of self. And since I have an illness of the mind and the emotions, my bondage is of my mind, of my emotions, and of my body. Resentment, fear, and sex. Clean up those three areas of my life and try to keep them clean, and I will not be in bondage to myself. I don't think I'm in as much bondage tonight as I was a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I realize I'm just a cog in the wheel of greatness called AA. I am not the miracle. I am of a miracle called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I am. I love this thing, don't you? If you're new and you're afraid to sponsor somebody, I understand how you feel. Grab them anyway. And your sponsor will help you sponsor them. That's my job. I just told someone I've been sponsoring. He has 27 days sober. I told him by the time I get back from Hawaii, he better have a sponsee. Well, what do I do with him? Nothing. Wait till I get there. See, because I'm going to help him sponsor whoever he gets so that he learns how to sponsor. Thank you.